Chapter 15, in which the child Twinkle is kidnapped. Timmins rather grudgingly took Charmaine the long, confusing way back to the kobold's cave. There, he said cheerfully, "You'll know the way from here," and disappeared inside the cave, leaving Charmaine alone with Waif. Charmaine did not know the way from there. She stood beside the object that Timmins had called a sled chair for several minutes, wondering what to do, and watching kobolds painting and carving and upholstering the object, and never sparing Charmaine a glance. At length, it occurred to her to put Waif down on the ground. "Show me the way to Great-Uncle William's house, Waif," she said. "Be clever." Waif trotted off with a will, but Charmaine soon began seriously to doubt that Waif was being clever. Waif trotted, and Charmaine walked, and they turned left, and then right, and right again, for what seemed hours. Charmaine was so busy thinking about what she had discovered that several times she missed the moment when Waif turned left or right, and had to wait, standing in the near dark, shouting, "Waif! Waif!" until Waif came back and found her. Quite probably Charmaine doubled the distance like this. Waif began toiling and panting with her tongue hanging out longer and longer, but Charmaine did not dare pick her up in case they never got home at all. She talked to Waif instead, to encourage them both. "Waif, I must tell Sophie what has happened. She must be worrying about Carsifer by now, and I must tell the king about the money too. But if I go to the royal mansion as soon as I get home, horrible Prince Ludovic will be there pretending to like crumpets. Why doesn't he like them? Crumpets are nice. Because he's a lubberkin, I suppose. I don't dare tell the king in front of him. We'll have to wait to go until tomorrow, I think. When do you think Prince Ludovic means to leave? Tonight? The king did tell me to come back in 2 days, so Ludovic should be gone by then. If I get there early, I can speak to Sophie first. Oh, dear, I've just remembered. Carsifer said they were going to pretend to leave, so we may not find Sophie there. Oh, Waif, I wish I knew what to do." The more Charmaine talked about it, the less she knew what to do. In the end, she was too tired to talk and just stumbled after the pale shape of the limping, panting Waif pattering along in front of her, until at long last Waif barged a door open and they were in Great-Uncle William's living room, where Waif gave a moan and fell over on her side, breathing in hundreds of quick little gasping breaths. Charmaine stared out of the windows at the hydrangeas, all pink and purple in sunset light. "We've been all day," she thought. "No wonder Waif's so tired. No wonder my feet hurt. At least Peter should be home by now, and I do hope he's got supper ready." "Peter!" she shouted. When there was no answer, Charmaine picked Waif up and went into the kitchen. Waif feebly licked Charmaine's hand in gratitude for not having to walk a step farther. Here the sunset light was falling on the zigzags of pink and white washing, still hanging, gently flapping in the yard outside. There was no sign of Peter. "Peter!" Charmaine called. There was no answer. Charmaine sighed. Evidently Peter had got thoroughly lost, even worse than she had, and there was no knowing when he would turn up now. "Too many pieces of coloured string," Charmaine muttered to Waif as she tapped the fireplace for dog food. "Stupid boy." She felt far too tired to do any cooking. When Waif had eaten 2 dishes of food and drunk the water Charmaine fetched from the bathroom, Charmaine staggered into the living room and had afternoon tea. After some thought, she had afternoon tea a second time. Then she had morning coffee. Then she wondered whether to go to the kitchen and have breakfast, but found she was too tired and picked up a book instead. A long time later, Waif woke her up by climbing on the sofa beside her. "Oh, bother this," Charmaine said. She went to bed without even trying to wash and fell asleep with her glasses still on her nose. When she woke next morning, she could hear that Peter was back. There were bathroom noises and footsteps, and the sound of doors opening and shutting. "He sounds awfully brisk," Charmaine thought. "I wish I did." but she knew she really had to get to the royal mansion today. So she groaned and got up. She dug out her last set of clean clothes and took such great care washing and doing her hair that Waif arrived anxiously from somewhere to fetch her. "Yes, breakfast. All right, I know," Charmaine said. "The trouble is," she admitted as she picked Waif up, "I'm scared of that colourless gentleman. I think he's even worse than the prince." She shoved the door open with one foot, turned, and turned left into the kitchen, where she stopped and stared. A strange woman was sitting at the kitchen table calmly eating breakfast. She was the kind of woman who you know at once is completely efficient. She had efficiency all over her narrow, sun-weathered face, and competence all over her strong, narrow hands. Those hands were busy efficiently cutting up a mighty pile of pancakes in syrup and slicing the stack of crispy bacon beside it. Charmaine stared, both at the pancakes and the woman's gypsy-like clothes. She wore bright, faded flounces all over and a colourful scarf across her faded, fairish hair. The woman turned and stared back. "Who are you?" they both said at once, the woman with her mouth full.
"I'm Charmaine Baker," Charmaine said. "I'm here to look after Great-Uncle William's house while he's away being cured by the elves."
The woman swallowed her mouthful.
"Good," she said. "I'm glad to see he left someone in charge. I didn't like to think of the dog being left all alone with Peter. She's been fed, by the way. Peter is not a dog person. Is Peter still asleep?"
Said Charmaine. "I'm not sure. He didn't come in last night." The woman sighed.
"He always vanishes as soon as I turn my back," she said. "I know he must have got here safely." She waved a fork loaded with pancake and bacon at the window. "That washing out there has Peter all over it." Charmaine felt her face go hot and red.
"Some of it was my fault," she admitted. "I boiled a robe." "Why do you think it was Peter?"
"Because," said the woman, "he has never been able to get a spell right in his life. I should know. I'm his mother."
Charmaine was rather shaken to realize she was talking to the witch of Montalbino. She was impressed.
"Of course Peter's mother is hyper-efficient," she thought. "Oh, but what is she doing here?"
"I thought you'd gone to Ingery," she said.
"I had," said the witch. "I'd got as far as Strangia when Queen Beatrice told me that Wizard Howl had gone to High Norland. So back I came across the mountains and dropped in on the elves, where they told me that Wizard Norland was with them. I was extremely alarmed then, because I realized that Peter was probably all alone here. I'd sent him here to be safe, you see. I came here at once."
"I think Peter was safe," Charmaine said. "Or he was until he got lost yesterday."
"He'll be safe now that I'm here," the witch said. "I can feel he's somewhere quite near." She sighed. "I suppose I'll have to go and look for him. He doesn't know his right hand from his left, you see."
"I know," Charmaine said. "He uses coloured string. He's quite efficient, really."
But she thought, as she spoke, that to someone as super-efficient as the Witch of Montalbino, Peter was bound to seem as hopeless as Peter thought Charmaine herself was.
"Parents," she thought.
She put Waif on the floor and asked politely,
"Excuse me for asking, but how did you get the breakfast spell to send you those pancakes?"
"By giving the right order, of course," said the witch. "Want some?"
Charmaine nodded.
The witch flicked efficient fingers toward the fireplace. "Breakfast," she commanded, "with pancakes, bacon, juice and coffee."
The loaded tray appeared at once, with a most satisfactory heap of pancakes trickling in syrup in the centre of it.
"See?" said the witch.
"Thank you," Charmaine said gratefully, taking hold of the tray. Waif's nose tilted up at the smell, and she ran round in little circles, squeaking.
It was clear that, to Waif, being fed by the witch did not count as proper breakfast. Charmaine put the tray on the table and gave Waif the crunchiest piece of bacon. "That's an enchanting dog you've got there," the witch remarked,
going back to her own breakfast.
"She is rather sweet," Charmaine admitted, as she sat down and began to enjoy the pancakes.
"No, I didn't mean that," the witch said impatiently. "I never gush. I meant that is what she is, an enchanting dog."
She ate more pancake and added with her mouth full,
"Enchanting dogs are quite rare and very magical. This one is doing you a great honour by adopting you as her human. I'm guessing that she even changed her sex to match yours. I hope you appreciate her as you should."
"Yes," said Charmaine, "I do. And I'd almost rather have breakfast with Princess Hilda," she thought. "Why does she have to be so severe?"
She went on with her breakfast, remembering that Great Uncle William had seemed to think that Waif was a male dog. Waif had seemed to be a male dog at first. Then Peter had picked her up and said she was female.
"I'm sure you're right," Charmaine added politely. "Why is Peter not safe here on his own? He's my age, and I am."
"I imagine," the witch said dryly, "that your magic works rather better than Peter's." She finished her pancakes and went on to toast. "If Peter can possibly bungle a spell, he will," she asserted, buttering the toast. "Don't tell me," she said, taking a large crunchy bite, "because I won't believe you that your magic doesn't do exactly what you mean it to, however you do it."
Charmaine thought of the flying spell and the plumbing spell and then of Rollo in the bag and said, "Yes," through a mouthful of pancake. "I suppose..."
"Whereas," the witch interrupted, "Peter is just the opposite. His method is always perfect, but the spell always misfires. One of my reasons for sending him to Wizard Norland was that I hoped the wizard could improve Peter's magic. William Norland owns the Boke of Palimpsest, you see."
Charmaine felt her face hotting up again.
She said, passing Waif half a pancake. "What does the Boke of Palimpsest do, then?"
"That dog will be too fat to walk if you go on feeding her like that," said the witch. "The Boke of Palimpsest gives a person the freedom to use all the magics of earth, air, fire, and water. It only gives fire if the person is trustworthy, and of course the person has to have magical ability in the first place." Her severe face showed just a trace of anxiety. "I think Peter has the ability."
Charmaine thought. "Fire. I put the fire out on Peter. Am I trustworthy then?"
"He must have the ability," she told the witch. "You can't make a spell go wrong if you can't do magic in the first place. What other reasons made you send Peter here?"
"Enemies," said the witch, somberly sipping her coffee. "I have enemies. They killed Peter's father, you know."
"You mean Lubbock?" Charmaine asked. She put everything back on her tray and took a last swig of coffee, preparing to get up and go.
"There is," said the witch, "only the one Lubbock, so far as I know. It seems to have killed all its rivals. But yes, it was the Lubbock that started the avalanche. I saw it."
"Then you can stop worrying," Charmaine said, standing up.
"The Lubbock's dead. Calcifer destroyed it the day before yesterday."
The witch was astonished. "Tell me," she said eagerly. Although she was itching to be off to the royal mansion, Charmaine found she had to sit down, pour herself another cup of coffee, and tell the witch the whole story, not only about the Lubbock and the Lubbock eggs, but also about Rollo and the Lubbock.
"And this is unfair use of witchcraft,"
she thought, as she found herself telling the witch how Calcifer seemed to be missing.
"Then what are you sitting about here for?" the witch said. "Run along to the royal mansion and tell Sophie at once. The poor woman must be out of her mind with worry by now. Hurry it up, girl."
"And not even thank you for telling me," Charmaine thought sourly. "I'd rather have my mother than Peter's any day. And I'd definitely rather have breakfast with Princess Hilda."
She got up and said a polite goodbye. Then, with Waif racing at her heels, she rushed through the living room and down the garden into the road. Lucky I didn't tell her about the conference room way, she thought, pounding along with her glasses bouncing on her chest. Or she'd make me go that way, and I'd never get a chance to look for Calcifer. Just before the road bent, she came to the place where Calcifer had exploded the Lubbock eggs. A huge lump of the cliff had fallen off there, sending a hill of boulders almost as far as the road. Several people who looked like shepherds were climbing about on the pile, searching for buried sheep and scratching their heads as if they were wondering what had caused the damage. Charmaine hesitated. If Calcifer was to be found, those people would have found him by now. She dropped to a walk and stared at the heap of broken stone carefully as she passed. There did not seem to be a trace of blue among the rocks, or a sign of a flame anywhere. She made up her mind to have a thorough search later and broke into a run again, hardly noticing that the sky was a clear blue and that there was gauzy blue haze over the mountains. It was going to be one of High Norland's rare scorching days. The only way this affected Charmaine was that Waif soon began to look seriously overheated, panting, rolling from side to side as she ran, and hanging her pink tongue out so far that it almost brushed the road. "Oh, you! I suppose it was that pancake," Charmaine said, snatching her up and pounding onward. "I wish the witch had not said that about you," she confessed as she ran. "It makes me worried about liking you so much." By the time she reached the town, Charmaine was as hot as Waif, so hot that she almost wished she had a tongue to hang out like Waif's did. She had to drop to a brisk walk, and even though she took the shortest way, it still seemed to take forever to reach Royal Square. At last she swung round the corner into the square and found her way blocked by a staring crowd. Half the citizens of High Norland seemed to be gathered there to stare at the new building standing a few feet away from the royal mansion. It was almost as tall as the mansion, long and dark and coaly-looking, and it had a turret on each corner. It was the castle Charmaine had last seen floating vaguely and sadly away across the mountains. She stared at it in as much amazement as everyone else in the square. "How did it get here?" people were asking one another, as Charmaine tried to push her way toward it. "However did it fit?" Charmaine looked at the four roads that led into Royal Square and wondered the same thing. None of the roads was more than half as wide as the castle was. But there it sat, solid and tall, as if it had built itself in the square overnight. Charmaine elbowed her way toward it with growing curiosity. As she came close under its walls, blue fire leapt from one of the turrets and plunged toward her. Charmaine ducked. Waif wriggled. Someone screamed. Everyone in the crowd backed away in a hurry and left Charmaine standing there on her own, facing a blue teardrop of flame hovering just level with her face. Waif's frayed tail pounded on Charmaine's arm, wagging a greeting.
"If you're going into the mansion," Calcifer crackled at them, "tell them to hurry it up. I can't keep the castle here all morning."
Charmaine was almost too delighted to speak.
"I thought you were dead," she managed to say. "What happened?"
Calcifer bobbled in the air and seemed a trifle ashamed.
"I must have knocked myself silly," he confessed. "I was under a heap of rocks somehow. It took me all yesterday to worm my way out. When I did get out, I had to find the castle. It had gone drifting off for miles. I've only just got it here, really. Tell Sophie. She was supposed to be pretending to leave today, and tell her I'm almost out of logs to burn. That should fetch her."
"I will," Charmaine promised. "Are you sure you're all right?"
"Just hungry," Calcifer said. "Logs, remember?"
"Logs," Charmaine agreed, and went up the steps to the mansion door, feeling suddenly that life was very much better and happier and freer than it had seemed before. Sim opened the great door to her, surprisingly quickly. He looked out at the castle and the staring crowd and shook his head.
"Ah, Miss Charming," he said. "This is surely becoming a rather difficult morning. I'm not sure that His Majesty is quite ready to begin work in the library yet, but do please to come inside."
"Thanks," Charmaine said, putting Waif down on the floor. "I don't mind waiting. I have to speak to Sophie first anyway."
"Sophie, Mrs. Pendragon, that is to say," Sim said as he heaved the door shut, "seems to be some of the difficulty this morning. The princess is highly put out and... But come this way and you will see what I mean."
He shuffled away down the damp corridor, beckoning Charmaine to follow. Before they even got to the corner, to the place where the stone stairs came down, Charmaine could hear the voice of Jamal the cook saying,
"And how is a person to know what to cook, when guests are always leaving, and not leaving, and then leaving again, I ask you?"
This was followed by fruity growls from Jamal's dog, and quite a chorus of other voices. Sophie was standing in the space below the stairs, holding Morgan in her arms, with Twinkle clinging anxiously and angelically to her skirt, while the fat nursemaid stood by looking useless as usual. Princess Hilda stood by the stairs, more intensely royal and polite than Charmaine had ever seen her, and the king was there too, red in the face and obviously in a right royal rage. One look at all their faces, and Charmaine knew that there was no point in mentioning logs here yet. Prince Ludovic was leaning on the end of the banisters, looking amused and superior. His lady was beside him, looking disdainful, in what was very nearly a ball dress. And to Charmaine's dismay, the colourless gentleman was there too, respectfully beside the prince. "You wouldn't think he'd just been robbing the king of all his money, the beast," Charmaine thought.
"I call this an utter abuse of my daughter's hospitality," the king was saying. "You had no right to make promises you don't intend to keep. If you were one of our subjects, we would forbid you to leave."
Sophie said, trying to sound dignified, "I do mean to keep my promise, sire, but you can't expect me to stay when my child has been threatened. If you'll let me take him away to safety first, then I'll be free to do whatever Princess Hilda wants." Charmaine saw Sophie's problem. With Prince Ludovic and the colourless gentleman standing there, she dared not say that she was only pretending to leave. And she did have to keep Morgan safe somehow. The king said angrily,
"Don't give us any more false promises, young woman."
By Charmaine's feet, Waif suddenly began growling. Behind the king, Prince Ludovic laughed and clicked his fingers. What followed took everyone by surprise. The nursemaid and the prince's young lady both burst out of their dresses. The nursemaid became a burly purple person with glistening muscles and bare clawed feet. The prince's lady's ball dress peeled away to show a thick mauve body in a black leotard that had holes cut in the back to make room for a pair of useless-looking small purple wings. Both lubberkins advanced on Sophie with big purple hands outstretched. Sophie yelled something and whirled Morgan away from the clutching hands. Morgan yelled too in surprise and terror. Everything else was drowned out by the high yapping of Waif and immense fruity growls from Jamal's dog as it charged after the prince's lady. Before the dog could get near either lubberkin, the prince's lady, little wings whirring, had dived on Twinkle and snatched him up. Twinkle screamed and flailed blue velvet legs. The nursemaid lubberkin put herself in front of Sophie to stop her trying to rescue Twinkle.
"You see," Prince Ludovic said, "you are leaving, or your child suffers."